Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
And here we are, episode number 165.
Ooh, time flies.
Just kidding, but I feel like I already lost track. I think it's number 6.
Are you doing semaphore?
I was pretending to be
semaphore. You know, I almost picked that news today to go back in how they use kind of like the visual telegraph. Semaphore. But I didn't. So whatever.
Was that Monty Python? Is that Monty Python skit of the semaphore, Wuthering Heights? And they're like out there, like Heathcliff, Kathy. Was that Monty Python?
I can't remember something like that, and I could see the Monty Python doing a sketch on that. that's for sure. But that is not what I'm going to be talking about today. Although there is a connection, but I'm not going to go there.
Do it.
So, welcome to the show, Diana, Sean. How are you guys mm-hmm. been doing so far?
It's another week under another our belt.
Yeah,
you're halfway through the year. So if you've got like a calendar that's like a page day, and you turn it around to get the, it's like you're doing that.
I've started my countdown to Christmas Day, so I'm already starting to play holiday songs and music just to. I'm trying to get my psychologically the temperature to lower because it's really hot here in California. So I feel like if I play, you know, White Christmas, for example, I feel like maybe I'll cool down a little bit.
It's going to be an Australian Christmas, I feel.
It's not, yeah, but I can tell it's not working. I'm trying, but it's not.
You could also start watching the Christmas movies on the Hallmark Channel that they run all through July. Maybe that'll also get you.
Hey, you know what? Christmas is whenever you want it to be. Any holiday.
True.
It's just in your heart, in your mind. And maybe there is
Lion Christmas.
Right.
Right. So you're just going to lock it, raunch all the presents up into the air, let them explode.
Oh, I like that.
And maybe it's a Cinco de Mayo connection too. So whatever comes down, you get to scramble and pick up, and that's your gift.
And like drink, a piñata.
And drink tequila.
Okay.
And
tequila always helps.
It's a whole new holiday.
This should be a holiday of all the holiday,
right?
You know, like when the holiday come together. And I know there was a movie, The Nightmare Before Christmas, that he tried to do that, but that didn't go too well. But that would be kind of cool just to celebrate any possible holiday in one day. Why not?
Some TV show did, I know, Superstore. They did that on Superstore. They had a party of all the holidays, and you just came and celebrated your favorite holiday.
Oh, nice. So it's already done. I'm always late. I think I had these brilliant ideas.
I think I said this one.
And then we're already done.
No
it.
Unique idea ever. It's already been thought of.
No more?
Simpsons did it. Simpsons did it.
They predicted everything, right?
It's the Nostradamus of my day.
Wow.
Simpsons predict South Park makes fun of it.
Yeah. Right. I think that actually Simpson predicted South Park at a certain point.
Can they make fun of the Simpsons? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm getting lost already. But you know, this is the week after the 4th of July. Our last episode was before that, so I hope everybody had a good relaxing time despite still things happening in the world, and there always will be happening.
People around the world watch the 4th of July fireworks shows in other countries. Mm. Do they care?
Hey,
it's not like New Year's Eve party.
Like the bicentennial Bastille Day in France. I mean, that was like, that was epic for the ages. So I think that, you know, other countries can get in on the festivities for their neighbors.
I can see that. I mean, there is always fan of other nations and want to celebrate something. So, but I don't know. I mean, I can tell it from my own experience. You know, growing up in Italy, I don't remember ever celebrate 4th of July, but.
What is it that's celebrated in Italy though? Cause we were there in Venice one year and they had fireworks over Venice for a holiday. And I forget what it was.
Many times you celebrate the day of the patron of a city. Like for example, there is San Giovanni, which is June 24th, and that's the day that they throw the fireworks all over the city. So every city may have a different celebration day. That's Italy's story.
Okay.
We're all celebrating our own thing. We all have
go your own way.
You know, it's like when they created Italy, they said, okay, now we have Italy. Now we have to make the Italians. And I don't think we're there yet. But, you know, our own personality, our own food, our own recipes, our own patrons and saints and what our tradition. I mean, a lot of local tradition that we carry around. So that's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's important to carry on tradition, even in the United States. We go back to the holiday of the holiday. We should always celebrate something. Why not?
Every day should be a holiday.
Absolutely. Sean, what's your favorite holiday? The one where we eat the most?
Anything that's food oriented, yes. Holiday.
I knew it. That's why I
bring it on.
I knew it. As long as there is food, Sean is gonna celebrate. Diana, what about you? What's your favorite?
You know, I love Valentine's Day and I've always loved it. Even when I was like very, very single and not happy at that moment about being single. I think it's because I really like, I like hearts and pinks and purples and reds. So I like the colors. And as far as food goes, chocolate is like really high on my list. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
That's good. Cool.
Candy. Candy's kind of in the food. I'll go for candy.
Candy, chocolate's okay.
And that's definitely another holiday that you wanna remember every day. You know, like it's a reminder, and they people talk about commercialization of it and how it comes about, and you know, the postcard and the Hallmark and all of that. But in the end, you're celebrating something important, and that's the meaning of it. Then the commercialization of it, we could probably live without it, but.
Yeah.
There you go.
Late chocolate. Stage capitalism.
Exactly. Exactly. But we're not here to talk about that.
I'm here.
Sean, when are we here to talk about today?
We're here to talk about cool things that we saw, uncovered, crossed our feed, looked for, whatever, that inspired us. Or make us think, or we think there's something interesting happening and we want to kind of bring a conversation to bear and see what others think about it.
Now, let me ask you this. This is for both of you. Since when we do Through the Tech Vine, do you have like a little notes? I'm saying like, you know, with a pencil or maybe not your note on your computer where you start running through all the newsletter that we get, all the magazine that we read, all the podcast that we hear. And do you like say, okay, this could be it. And we kind of, I don't know. I think I started to pay more attention to what's going on the positive side of things instead of, here's another crap that just happened. Thanks a lot. Now I'm paying more attention to the positive things. I have a more positive attitude towards technology in general. Is that happening to you as well?
Yeah, it is. I've always been interested in tech and tech advancements, but I'll read something and I'll think, oh, that's really cool. That would be something that would be great to bring to the tech mine. So yeah, it has, it's changed instead of just always focusing, because in security, as a security practitioner, we do tend to really focus on where's the exposures, where are the vulnerabilities, what's going to go wrong. So it's changed. It's been good.
And that's what makes the news.
Exactly. For me, it's made me pay attention.
to all the news, all the good news.
You're forcing me to think about some. I'm paying attention to stuff. In all seriousness, I actually, I don't reveal my secrets here for all the cool stuff.
You have a secret.
I actually think about something.
It's like in a note. Yeah.
Now, I often wonder what's going on in a particular space. And so I'll just randomly search for something and see if there's anything that's been happening in that particular space in a while. And yeah, it could be digital technology, which is easy to find and hone in on, or it could be something else. I actually brought something else today. I think the last few for me were all about information-driven technology. Yeah. So I'm excited to share what I found today.
I would say in general, and in this industry, in the cybersecurity, but in general, when you are an expert in something, you tend to just pay attention and focus on that because you don't want to know everything about that. But I feel like when you open your mind, it's when things get more interesting and you connect it to society and how everything has a different angle that you can look at. And I love what we're doing here. And I hope that our audience are paying attention to that and maybe open their mind as well to the same way that we do. I mean, we never have an answer, but we kind of start we're the conversation starters. It's kind of like the fire starter.
I know of a few people who have started using the Shazam Bird app that I talked about last week or the week before. So yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, they're IDing birds, bird song, which is
I love
great.
It. It means that somebody is listening to us and trying the crazy thing that we talk about.
Do the birds have an app to identify us?
They just might.
Are they a good human or a bad human?
I don't think they need an app. They're smarter than us in those kind of things. They can probably, I don't know, like the dogs last time we talked about it, they can smell miles away. Probably birds they know that they better stay away.
I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I was on a walk yesterday and I saw this deer down by a stream.
Yeah.
And I could barely see it, but it clearly caught that there was movement and it recognized that it was somebody standing upright on 2 feet and it froze. And as I walked through some trees, it took that moment to get the hell out of there to escape while I couldn't see it. And it knew where I was in the mix of things. So clearly they know I was human, potential threat, but that's probably a blanket statement or blanket view for them, right? All humans, because they've been shot at so many times by hunters, all humans are bad.
Predator, yeah.
It gets in your, you know, in your instinct. I mean, we're carrying stuff in our brain that are back from the prehistoric time. We react to that.
And epigenetics, right? Like you can literally pass down some of that stuff in your, you know, that knowledge in your genes. But crows, I think it's crows, they're really, really smart. And they will learn if a human being is mean to them, they'll learn and have a certain call. Like there's that jerk who's coming around and then warn the other crows. And there's some really interesting research where they were putting masks on and then being mean to the crows and seeing that if a person changed the mask, that they were identifying basically the faces.
Yes.
And they had a warning of, here's that jerk again, everybody back off. Good special call.
So this goes to your idea, Sean, that it's not maybe just a blanket. It's maybe they do recognize, you know, like elephant. Don't elephant, they recognize memory. They memorize people.
Yeah.
For a very long time. And yeah, crow are extremely, extremely smart and very social as well. That's one other thing. Okay. I think we started a show about animals. It looks like we really love animals. And we always talked about animals.
I'm actually speaking at a festival coming up. It's in the UK, but it's also virtual, called Now. And it's like the Nature of Work Festival. And that's the whole theme, is how the natural world needs to come into our lives and in our corporate lives to help us to be more connected and more. So I'm pretty excited because a talk that most security conferences weren't interested in, which is about the natural world and security. They actually are very interested in that talk. So I'm excited that I get to bring that together and talk about
it. Yeah. Really cool. We should talk about it after you give that talk. I like that. All right. So 15 minutes are gone because we really enjoy talking, apparently.
Flies when you're having fun.
About everything, really. But let's
being made of fun of. I don't know.
Let's get on what is the topic of our conversation, and that is technology news. And I think we follow the rule, and so Diana goes first.
Well, quickly, we tried something last week, a play on words, a play on a word.
Yeah,
we shared the word first. This week we're not going to share the word.
We're not going to share the word,
but we're all going to try.
We'll tell you at the end what the word is. And you may or may not hear it throughout the next half hour or so. So
there you go.
The play on word game.
The play on word.
Find.
All right. Story time.
Find Waldo.
Find the word.
Find the Waldo. All right. Let's go. Diana, go.
Okay. So I really like the musical Guys and Dolls. Which I realize it sounds a little sexist, like saying dolls, but anyway, it's a musical from the from the 50s. And I really like it a lot. And there's a scene in it where this one character, Sky Masterson, he's sort of really an agilist. He doesn't laugh a lot. He's very dour. He's very, serious. And Nathan Detroit, who's trying to get money for a crap game, is trying to put him into a bet and wants to kind of rig the bet a little bit by understanding whether this one shop that they go to, Mindy's, sells more strudel or more cheesecake. And Nathan Detroit tries to beat out Sky Masterson on this, but Sky ultimately tricks Nathan and turns the tables. But I like the idea of food and pastry, and that just always stuck in my mind. So when I was reading about tech stuff, this story really stuck out to me, which is about this thing, Bakery Scan. Because if Sky and Nathan had this, they would have been able to use Bakery Scan to identify the pastries. And it came out of Japan, and an analyst had discovered that the more pastry options people had to buy, the more likely they were to purchase a bunch of pastries. They also found out that if they were wrapped, that they were less likely to buy. So they wanted to have unwrapped, unmarked pastries and a lot of different ones. So wonderful. You have great variety. They're easy to access. But when people were putting them on their trays, they would take them to check out. And now the cashier is looking at all these different pastries that apparently had different prices and was having a really hard time figuring out how do you charge. So a company came along and said, I can solve this problem with AI, and came up with Bakery Scan. And Bakery Scan now can look at the different pastries and figure out what they are and create the cost for that tray very, very quickly so that people could move rapidly through lines, which ended up being very successful and very popular. But this is the really cool technology. A doctor from Kyoto was watching the news and getting inspired and saw Bakery Scan working on the pastries and thought, you know what? Those pastries actually look quite a bit like cancer cells. And we're having trouble identifying cancer cells. So they went to the medical doctor community, went to the Bakery Scan folks and said, can we retrain this to identify cancer cells? And they were in fact able to retrain it. So now there's something called Cyto AI Scan coming out of the Bakery Scan. And that has a 99% accuracy rate looking at cancerous urinary cells, which are similar to pastry. So it was like amazing all the way from a 1950s musical up through AI treating cancer cells. But that was the trajectory. So I just loved that this doctor was so inspired and saw the natural world, the pastries in the cells, and then they were able to retrain it. So
he was a hacker.
That's my cool
the doctor thing. Was a hacker.
He was like, yeah, let me take this part and reuse it in a new a good hacker.
Yeah, exactly.
In a new way.
Well, you got to be a hacker in anything you want to evolve. You have to take what is there and dissect it and say like, yeah, I could use part of this for what I need. And I really like, well, first of all, you mentioned the result, 99% accuracy. Yeah. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me. And how does that compare to a human diagnostic? Because, you know, many times when we talk about artificial intelligence reading images and scans and x-ray and all of that, and with machine learning, it gets better and better. I mean, right. Moles and, you know, skin, dermatological things. And so I was wondering if they already have a comparison with that. But I'm assuming 99% is pretty damn good.
It's pretty good. I mean, I'm interested if they can expand it, because it said specifically in the article it was cancerous urinary cells. I wonder if they're going to be able to expand it to other cells, or maybe those are the only ones that look, not being a doctor or oncologist, I'm not quite sure how many cancer cells look like pastries.
But I mean, isn't that once you build this engine, right? This artificial intelligence, machine learning engine that is able to recognize images, you know, from Google to everybody's working on image recognition and patterns and language recognition. I feel once you get it right, can you just tweak the algorithm and start looking for something else, but with that brain working?
It's a little harder than one would think, because the training, make sure the training sets don't overfit so that they get too adjusted to a particular set of data, so that when something new is different, that they don't fail to see that, which is, it seems kind of easy, because sometimes we look at something and we can see incremental changes and be aware of them. But if the other times, think of how hard it is to see incremental changes, like in your face every day as you age. We don't know how much you've aged until you look at an older photo of yourself and then you're like, oh. So that's it, is that it would depend on the what you're looking for, what that incremental change is. And it can be actually a lot harder to train these to be accurate than we think it might be, because you have to test it against the new unseen data, not just on the data that it's been trained on. So it can be a little trickier than it sounds. It'd be great. And I think early on in some of the, when you were hearing a lot about healthcare moonshots, I think that was the initial thinking was, oh my gosh, we've got computer recognition. We can not just see what's cancerous, but also predict what's going to become cancerous. And it turned out it was more challenging than some of the early optimists had hoped.
That's why we're so far from general artificial intelligence.
Well, that's, yeah.
That's, that's the other thing. Meanwhile, Sean, all you heard is pastries.
I heard pastry. I'm hungry to fight cancer. Look at that. I'm not going to go there yet. But the thing that I find interesting is, and I don't know if what you uncovered has any information on this, but Marco said general AI. I'm wondering, 99% seems pretty accurate. So my guess is it's probably a general detection where there's probably some subtleties of how the cancer works in certain types of people in certain ways, based on their diet, their health regime, whatever it is, it probably acts and looks differently or behaves differently, even if it looks the same for this technology. So I'm wondering, and we struggle with this in technology in general, identifying something using that to help us understand. But once we need to take action, the variances and the differences make it difficult to actually take an action that's going to be successful as well. So I don't know if you got into anything there with respect to, now we know it fits this category of cancer, we can now treat it, or we can now do something with it. I don't know if it did have any of that info.
I don't think with the repurposed bakery scan to Cyto AI scan, I'm not sure if that would be the right system for that. But I do get interested in the research that's going on with AI and ML by being able to take so much data, because data is fuel for these systems. And in a lot of times attempting to predict, we want fewer options because the easier the path to figure out, you know, oh, if it's something as simple as smoking cancer, non-smoking, no cancer, right, which unfortunately isn't the case. But if you get that, then it's you know, that path can go pretty quickly. But AI and ML, because data is fuel, having more options can actually get better outcomes. So it may be that as we start looking at more data from people around the world, we can start coming up with that these different weights and factors, we can make more sense of them than we can right now, because right now we tend to be a little reductive. Like, don't we know smoking and cancer? So we say, okay, just, but that doesn't mean you won't get any kind of cancer, and it doesn't mean you won't get lung cancer. But it may be not smoking, exercising, eating vegetables, you know, is going to give you sort of that more. So I do get hopeful that as we have more data and be able to take global data in, that we may start seeing some of these more complex probabilities and paths emerge. And how
that's the power of artificial intelligence.
It's,
I feel like, again, it's the augmentation of our capacity. It's not that we couldn't do that. It's just like, with the power of computing, you can really process so much more information so much faster and get to the result eventually faster than that.
Well, what this tells me is this is a collection of data generating an information point that means that's another data point that we can feed into something else, perhaps the bigger picture. So in the it becomes part of the context, bigger picture context of a scenario. Maybe in and of itself, it's not designed to solve that problem, but to help feed another data set or an algorithm that could help solve the problem.
I like that. Yeah. And that's like what science is, right? We all stand on the shoulders of giants. Yeah, that's great.
That's the attitude. I feel like we're expecting way too much. Like, you know, artificial intelligence is not going to be doing this, but it's helping, you know, one step at a time. It's still a very early, young intelligence.
With the amount of pastry I eat, I feel like a giant.
So, okay.
You know what that means. Stand on my shoulders.
All right. Good one. Good one.
That is cool.
Sean.
So mine happens to be in, it crosses into healthcare as well, but it isn't limited to that. It goes into space and other things. And it's, I mean, this idea probably isn't new, but the way we can, just like we've been talking about, the way we can apply it to different things, find the use cases and the scenarios, they're becoming more prevalent. So as the technology is being tried and proven, we can see it in many, many different examples. And I came across this company and they make technology. It's a physical technology called biofiber, and it's obviously man-made piece of fabric. Well, it's not obvious, but it's a man-made piece of fabric that is mesh-like and has properties that are pliable and stretchable but still firm, and so different applications. One was instead of sutures or other types of bandages, you could use this biofiber to help heal a wound and perhaps not leave scars or heal wounds that can't be stitched or things like that. But then also where I think it's really interesting is inside the body. So it can mimic a human tendon, certain application of it. So, and be much stronger than a tendon, natural tendon would be. And so what intrigued me is this idea that we create this world where we can become stronger, better, almost bionic, right? I think we've maybe touched on this in one of the previous episodes.
Cyborgs,
exactly. But so with material, not necessarily digital technology, but with material that makes us stronger and live longer and perhaps takes out something that is cancerous or infected or whatever, and replace it with something that doesn't have the properties that allows it to be compromised by disease. And then so that was all very medical, but then there's the using that same type of technology to create objects that we use in our everyday life, and then ultimately in space, so much lighter, less destructible. So as we move from Earth and start to explore the atmosphere and potentially even other planets in my lifetime, some of these technologies are going to be required to help us achieve some of those things. So fibrous technology, a lot of innovation. I mean, a lot of different applications. It seemed cool to me, both from a human perspective and a potential for where we could go next.
Okay, I have so many questions. So that I
have all the answers. What
luckily,
they're all wrong.
What's it made of? Yeah. What's it made out of?
Let me see if I can.
Magic.
It is magic.
Magic.
And then I definitely want to know
it's a cellular matrix, and it's
okay.
I want to say it's 3D printing, but I don't know what the core thing is. I don't, okay, collagen based. There we go.
Collagen. Is that vegan collagen, or would that be?
It's vegan.
He doesn't know
it's
that.
It's cow free. I don't know. Yeah.
And I understand, like, if so, I could see it putting the biofiber on a wound, and you know, that kind of mechanism I understand a little tiny bit. But what about the inside? Like, I'm thinking about, so I'm a runner, and at my age, sometimes I feel it in one of my knees when I run. Is that something like that? Could the biofiber go in my body and support my knee? Like, what's that look like inside?
So from their wording, it's an excellent artificial tendon model that shows strength higher, greater than a real tendon.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but so you create, let me understand. So you create this microfiber according to the need that you may have. It's not just one microfiber that understand what it has to turn into, right? So
right. There's
one that is going to mimic, I'm guessing here, I'm going on a tangent. It's going to mimic the skin so that if it needs to heal a wound, it will heal a wound as the skin. And then you need one for the tendon, you will do that. You need one for a broken coffee teacup, and it will make ceramics. So you kind of like recreate whatever molecular components you have in order to rebuild what is broken. I may be completely wrong. I'm just trying to understand here, which would be really cool, right?
Yeah, that's even...
Yeah, and I don't know if it crosses over into ceramic cup repair.
No, that's the extreme. But I mean, the difference between a tendon and skin, it's clear. Like, you know, you have to give instruction to this fiber to behave in a way.
Is it available now? I mean, do they have it, or is this something they're developing in a lab? And are these actual use cases or theoretical use cases?
Costco. You can go to Costco, but you have to buy a lot of it.
That's right.
Yeah. I
it's
see.
A subscription.
Yeah. I want to read Netflix. Is it available?
I want to read more about this because I think it's fascinating. We'll definitely share the link to that, right? Because that would be the solution for a lot of a lot of big problems. I mean, if it can rebuild damaged tissues, that's
huge.
Magic. That's magic. Yeah.
And it's not clear whether it's a replacement to a tendon that's damaged or one that augments and supports one that is healing. So it kind of sits along. It's not very clear for me from what I've been able to see. And clearly I'm not a spokesperson.
I mean, think about a broken bone. Think about a broken bone. If you can just open it up and instead of putting metal and nails and whatever you put in nowadays, it's just this magic glue. It's almost like a better glue. You know, like when you're fixing thing, like, you know, when you see this TV show that are trying to sell you stuff that they just put, I don't know, something on the wall and it just, you know, you don't move it anymore. It's the super, I mean, what that super glue does is that alter the molecule of things and it stitch it together. So technically, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to put that in my body, but the fiber version of it, yeah.
I think super glue was originally created to do a version of super glue was originally created to bring together skin to actually glue skin.
That was actually the first intention. Oh wow!
I think it was. Well, this should be the show of, like, we talk about tech that we kind of know, but we don't really. I do.
We don't. We never claim that we are the expert. As I said at the beginning, we create more questions and more trouble than before you actually start looking at or listening to our show. So be ready. We're not making your life easier here. We're just you gotta come with your own curiosity and keep going in the homework.
Yes, don't use super glue as medical glue unless it's
no, there is no medical advice here at all.
Don't gorilla glue your head. Right.
Absolutely not.
I'm not suggesting face your doctor and say, "Give me that tendon out of biofiber." But I think we focused on the medical one. There's a whole other area that they're working on too. That's eco-friendly, where instead of taking fibrous materials from trees and plants and things like that, and perhaps destroying the planet that way, this technology can help be used to help create textiles. So I don't know if it's all the way down to consumer clothing, but certainly, I don't know, maybe N95 masks instead of using whatever those materials are. They didn't make this claim, but maybe there's an option there or something like that. But so a lot of different applications for which I thought was pretty cool.
And do they grow the biofiber? How's it made? How's it manufactured?
I think they follow a bunch of celebrities with syringes.
I see. And All right, they extract it from the celebrities. Yeah, now that makes sense. That and tears of children at amusement parks. I think is also what it's powered by.
Injections, exactly.
You know what I'm wondering? If somebody that is agilist. Can it watch the show?
I don't think so. I think an agilist is just gonna they won't laugh at our jokes and our
definitely not my jokes. There won't be any agilist behavior.
Will other people laugh? From
the we should have a disclaimer. This show is not recommended for agilists.
I agree. No. I think so. Yes.
Because we actually have fun with this, but we're serious. I mean, these are serious topic, and I'm excited we bring it up on the show.
It's real technology. We don't always really understand it as well as an expert might, but it's all real technology.
But we like to talk about it.
Yeah.
And there are other things that we might understand a little bit better. And this is actually, I think it's the time for my historic technology.
Quantum cryptography. That's where Marco's going next.
I don't understand that. No. I'm going something a little bigger, and I wanted to go with something that happened in the day of history between our last show, because, you know, that precise day, it's a little tough. So I took myself a week of space in between, and I ended up with July 3rd, 1969. What do you think can happen then? Little quiz.
What was Woodstock going on? Are we in Woodstock zone?
Woodstock was 69, but that's not it.
Am I in the wrong month?
Okay. It's around that time, I guess, but that not technology, really.
Yeah, that's well, yeah. Right.
Well, think of 1969. Think about...
Awesome. You love space. I'm going to act naturally.
I was going to say moon. Yeah, I read something with the moon.
Well, that 69 was a big year on top of the fact that I was born in that year, but that's a different story.
A red letter
year. Yeah, we went on the moon, and it looks so far away. That was, important. But this, for our everyday life, we would have a completely different life if this didn't happen. And I'll cut it short, is the day that the UCLA issues a press release stating that it will become the first station in a nationwide computer network, which for the first time will link together computers of different makes and using different machine languages in one time sharing system, also known as the beginning of the internet.
Yeah.
And then that was the statement. They started working on it with Stanford and another university that now run out of my head. But the first thing actually that happened, the first communication happened in October of the same year. And do you know what was the first thing that ever went through the internet? Today, I feel like I'm a quiz talk show host.
Watson, can you please come here? Is that the...
Nope. It's a word.
Hello, and world?
It's a word, and it didn't actually finish because the connection fell.
It was a fail whale tweet.
There was a system crashed. And so the first message went from UCLA to Stanford Research Institute was LO, which is not short for LOL, but it's short for login. That's what they were supposed to communicate. And then after L and O went through and it crashed. And after that, a lot of things happened. So that was an important day in history, because then internet became what it became, and with all the problems and the beautiful things connected to that.
The wonder.
So okay. Think about...
And
think
you
about,
need to log in.
And you need to log in.
So when was the first time you guys logged in?
It's funny.
Way after that. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Sean.
So I would say I was 84.
Wow.
That's pretty early.
80.
That's really early.
You at school? What? Why?
Oh, yeah, in school. And then professionally, I worked at a company that was all connected. And it's funny, I was thinking about an application that I worked on for this construction company where they had all these secret data about plants and how they grew and what their primary pests were and how you treated for those and infections and diseases and all this knowledge that they had. And they wanted to provide that to their employees out in the field. There was a landscape construction company.
Yeah.
And they said, we need a system that is centralized data-wise, distributed app-wise, interface-wise, encrypted, so it's safe at all times, but then accessible, decrypted when needed. And so I actually, it was one of my first projects to ever engineer and build with code, and it was really cool. So that was in 91, something like that.
Still very early
for using
the internet. How about you, Diana?
Crypto. Was that DES? Were you using DES for back in? Okay. Wow. Not even triple DES, probably. Wow. That's very cool.
I wasn't on my own, but it was fun.
Yeah, so I tell the story a lot. It was 1978 because my dad worked for MIT Lincoln Lab, so I got a login to the PDP 10s and 11s at Tech Square, which were connected to the DARPA, and then I started moving around and getting into different systems. Some maybe I wasn't supposed to get on, but anyway. but anyhow, no, but everything's fine. I was not like not a criminal in any way, shape, or form. I'm all good with the government. But anyhow, yeah, so that was it. And I fell absolutely in love, because even in 1978, we had instant messaging. We were able to log in and send messages to each other and email, and I could talk to people across the country. And I just thought it was the future. It was all green screen or amber screen and, crazy dial up the phone and put it in the coupler modem. But it was, you could tell it was the future. You could tell us what we were going to be using going forward. How about you, Marco?
Oh, I'm a lay bloomer for that, because my background has never really been into, hacking stuff and computer. I mean, I like electronic stuff. I was into building stereo systems and playing with that kind of stuff, but not really building, but assembling and put it together. But no, my first computer was actually when I was in college, so it was in 94, something like that, 95. Okay. And it was already with Windows on it, so it didn't play with the green screen and Ooh. And the dot. I mean, I kind of
Windows users are agileist. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's true.
But I do remember that when I installed the first modem, I felt like I was, going to space or something. Like, it was like rocket science. Like, you have to do this and this and that. Was like that old thing. And I remember I had some I did like political science, so they would definitely not teach me anything like that there. So I had a friend in college that would like doing engineer. And I would call them. I said, "You got to help me with this." And they already had experience, but it wasn't simple for anyone to actually make that damn modem work. And then the day they work, and your first, you open the browser, and the first time you go on, I will never forget that. And the email, and it was a big discovery, but I didn't get to experience the what it came before that, And I'm very fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the vintage technology. So that's why I brought it up.
Kicking it old school. Honestly, it felt very similar. It's just that it was all command line. So you typed it instead of you clicked on it. But, when you're instant messaging, okay, we didn't have emojis. But, when you're texting somebody, It's
yeah.
But you didn't.
It just, I think it's about to get into... It's about getting into the system, right? And understanding how it works, and don't think that it's magic and I can't touch it because it's going to break. When something doesn't work, just try to make it work.
So I do have to say, some of the early graphical user system, you did touch it and it would break. I felt like a friend of mine who ran a very early data center had this great quote about, at one point I won't say which machines they were because I don't want to, but they would go by certain machines and be like, "Don't look at that because it'll crash." just go really fast past that server because
that's scary. I hope we went a long way from that. Yeah. Sean, are you afraid of breaking things? When you play with a new software or hardware or
just reboot.
Just reboot, kick it and reboot.
That's right.
Try turning it off and on again.
Yeah.
Before we end, I have a question related to that. Sorry, Sean. But how do you feel about you guys actually were, working on building software or, working with hardware, and nowadays, you don't even talk about building a computer anymore. I mean, even myself, which I'm not that savvy. I mean, I would install new RAM by myself and open the computer and see what's going on and expand and maybe change the graphic driver for better video games and stuff like that. But nowadays, there's not even screws anymore. You can't fix anything. There was an article not too long ago I was reading about how we shouldn't start maybe making things repairable again instead of having it to send it back or buy a new one. And Diana, we had a conversation a while back about circular economy and sustainability in hardware. Exactly. So how do you feel about this, both of you? Like, is it a good or a bad thing that we don't need to put our hands in the hardware anymore?
I miss the flexibility of being able to replace something that's broken. But the thing that really makes me the most frustrated is the aging out of the batteries, because we really don't have to create an obsolescence of batteries. That's primarily around profit. I can see some purposes for other, you know, when people get in and start mixing, when you take off, when you get into the guts of a system, it's pretty easy to break it. I mean, early on when I was doing that as a job, I broke more systems than I care to admit, because it's not, you know, it's, you learn to be gentle over time. But, you know, I can get that you don't want the average person or some 3-year-old kid taking off the back of their tablet and playing around in there. But so I can see pros and cons. Maybe it'd be nice to have a little bit more modularity, but where I just don't get it at all is this, there's the cash grab of forcing replacement because of battery loss. That's just ridiculous. I don't know. What do you think, Sean?
Well, it's funny, and I think I know the article Mark was referring to, because it popped up my feed as well, and some pretty big names are connected to the conversation. But funny enough, I was looking at some of this last week as I was preparing for some of our other shows, and there are a number of organizations, but I landed on one called Restart Project. It's out of the UK, and I think it partners with the Right to Repair. And yeah, this
Right to
Repair is the other part.
Yeah.
And I think it goes to, so there's obviously the part where I think we should understand how things work and be able to get in there and replace parts that have gone bad and not be forced to buy something new. The other side of that is we're destroying the world, I think, by creating all these electronics and then just dumping them in the bin. Now, we obviously have buybacks and rebates and things like that, where some companies are taking technology and presumably refurbishing and reusing parts. I don't know. Why are we reliant upon some organizations and not holding others accountable to do the same? And why can't we have that option to do it ourselves when we want to? Yeah. And that's everything electronic and digital, not just our phones and computers, but it's everything that's going to be smart, right? As we continue to connect everything.
Well, everything in general. I mean, I don't know, try to fix, an air dryer or anything. I grew up, breaking apart bicycles and then Vespas, and knowing how an engine kind of works. I wouldn't do that on a car, and now even less, because I wouldn't even lift the hood of my car. You know, it's all electronic and stuff. And I mean, seriously, but I think that the key for this, and that's why I asked you, is the fact that we also, and Sean, you mentioned that, we lose an opportunity to understand, at least have an idea of how a computer works. Right. Yeah. Knowing that you're handling, I don't know, that extra RAM to put in there. Now, I never knew how RAM actually works, but I knew that there was this thing that I could put it in there. I could look at the fan inside the computer. I could look at the cable and changing things. And it's like, it doesn't feel so scary anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And so that knowing at least enough to understand what this technology is, and it's not something that we need to fear, but it's something that we need to grasp. And I know people of, my dad, I mean, he's scared of breaking the iPhone or any smartphone. Like if I do something wrong, it's gonna break. I'm like, no, you can't break this thing. It's like, you know, you just reboot everything and it's gonna work. But you know, we have created this lack of education. There's not a manual anymore to come with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, here you go. Use it. It does everything by itself. I think we're missing that curiosity that we have. And we ask so many questions that we don't have an answer. You know, how this pastry thing work? How this bandage work? And we may not have the answer. We're not the one that invented that. But that curiosity, we're missing out.
Excellent point. Yeah, I'm curious about this stuff for sure. Sometimes I may go off and do a little looking after we have our conversation. Some things may not be my inspiration, but I think overall, I mean, we're talking about things that could change the way we live, right?
Absolutely.
So I'd like to at least know what's going on and at some level understand what the impact
keep the curiosity up.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is nothing laughable about that.
Yeah. No. Nothing at all.
You know, it was really hard to. I tried to squeeze that word in, just as we're wrapping. It's you can.
And I think it's agilast. So for everybody listening, it's agilast, which is somebody who has no sense of humor.
And it's very hard to put in our conversation because we're always laughing.
We are always laughing.
We're non-agilast.
At ourselves, at least. Yeah.
Can you imagine that? I mean, is this like a psychological, like a psychiatric mental issue, or is referred to someone that is just very serious, or is really the incapacity of laughing? Because I can see that be it, something.
No, I think it's more the second. I think it's more that it's just someone who doesn't. So they're just like back grumpy. To Ebenezer, like Ebenezer. That we were talking about before, you know, sort of just like a Scrooge kind of guy. Yeah. Grumpy, dwarf. Right? It was grumpy was a dwarf, right? Is that an offensive word? Now I feel like I said a bad word.
Oh my gosh. Dang.
No, it was one of the seven dwarfed was okay. Characters. I think we're okay. I think Disney may have put already a disclaimer on that where at the time, you know how they do now, they have to, you know, we're depicting something that at the time was not offensive and they took care of that, I think.
Or like a Bronte character, like, right? Like Rochester, Mr. Rochester. I think he didn't laugh much. So I think that's sort of the...
Cool. Well, so I guess the moral of the story today, which we went a little longer, but I think it was a very interesting conversation, especially when we went into the importance of understanding thing. I think the moral of the story is be curious. And don't be grumpy.
And laugh.
And laugh. As we try to do, as we bring you some tech news that grab our attention and that we hope that make you curious. And then you click on the link where we got the news. And then from there, you keep clicking and surfing the World Wide Web that was invented, or at least envisioned back in those days.
1969. This one.
And we hope you can log in all the way.
All right. Hello.
Or LOL. Laugh out loud.
I think that's more perfect.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for following us. We'll be back next week, same time, which now it's noon Pacific Standard Time. And if you're following us from Europe or other place on this planet, let us know. We'd like to know that that you're watching us, you're listening to the podcast. So thank you much. Peace.
Peace out.
Peace out.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.